Sometimes I use the name Trent Goodbody, but at all times I'm a man. And right now I am speaking to you through 106.9 FM and also streaming across the globe online at talkradioperump.com. Oh, and I guess I should say that my views are my views and my views alone. And I'm not speaking on the behalf of anyone else, and my opinions are not necessarily those of anyone who does not adopt them. Now that we have the legal mumbo-jumbo out of the way, I want to say welcome. Thanks for tuning in. This is Exercising Liberty with Trent Goodbody. You know, the world is a stage, and the longer that this madness circus goes on, the more I tend to believe that the world is indeed a stage. Have you ever heard of the Truman Show or seen that movie? What if this reality really is an elaborate test of our soul? What if our choices really do matter? I don't want to get too metaphysical here, but it is something to think about. I like to treat life as if I'm always being tested. I want to pass the test. I want to get to the next level. So, in the grand scheme of things, maybe we should talk about schemes. Does the government weaponize crises to systematically take away liberties? And particularly, are vaccine mandates based in science? Experimental use authorizations as a result of a declared emergency are one thing to people who wish to be experimented on. But to mandate any experimental treatment is in reality a crime. If science can't be questioned, that isn't science, it's propaganda. And the idea that healthy people are endangering others simply by breathing is the biggest scam in the history of the world. Now we have a new symptomless variant and people are eating it up. Probably literally. Anyway, so let me try to get this straight. They want you to take a vaccine to reduce the symptoms of this symptomless variant, huh? Well, I'm not coming right out and saying that we are constantly being lied to, but I am asking some questions that I thought had already been answered long ago. I'm not here to tell anyone what to do or what they should or shouldn't be putting into their bodies, but I am here to say that the principal, foundational, essential element of freedom is not to just be able to do whatever you want. I mean, that sounds good, and under certain circumstances, we should be able to just do whatever we want, but we can't just do whatever we want because it's wrong to hurt others. So the primary foundational principle of freedom is actually to let people make their own decisions unless they are harming someone else. But to force someone to do something that they don't want to do, you know, usually they call that rape. What else would you call forcibly penetrating the body with an unwanted foreign object and or coercing them to do it under threat of being isolated in a government camp for a length of time if you choose not to participate in this experimental gene therapy, or maybe taking away your job, or, you know, decimating the economy, making the shipping prices go up and gas prices go up. There, we are being robbed. And plus, there's a long history in America of the FDA approving things that were later found to be extremely harmful. From asbestos to DDT to opiates to Roundup, to mandate anything experimental is a crime. And then what comes next after fear stops working? It's going to be force. And it's not about health, it's about total control. When vaccination started, the world was told that it would be voluntary, not mandatory or mandated, but now certification and proof of vaccines are required to enter certain places and restaurants, and employers threaten to fire employees who refuse vaccination. Whatever happened to voluntary? Vaccine passports are the precursor to digital ID wallets. This digital ID system gives unelected globalists, the richest of the rich, the power to cut your access to funds, healthcare, travel, food, or anything else whenever they please. New York is already considering a bill that will put people in camps that refuse a medical treatment. This is not only wrong, but it is a war crime and human rights violation, let alone a violation of the Nuremberg Code. What is the Nuremberg Code, you might ask? Well, 1947. The judgment by the War Crimes Tribunal at Nuremberg laid down 10 standards to which physicians must conform when carrying out experiments on human subjects in a new code that is now accepted worldwide. And this was back in 1947. And they say physicians. It's because the military should not be carrying out experiments or giving out medical procedures to people. But this judgment established a new standard of ethical medical behavior for the post-World War II human rights era. Amongst other requirements, this document enunciates the requirement of voluntary informed consent of the human subject. The principle of voluntary informed consent protects the right of the individual to control his own body. This code also recognizes that the risk must be weighed against the expected benefit, and that unnecessary pain and suffering must be avoided. This code recognizes that doctors should avoid actions that injure human patients. The principles established by this code for medical practice now have been extended into the codes of general medical ethics as well. So, the Nuremberg Code, 1947. Permissible medical experiments. The great weight of the evidence before us to affect that certain types of medical experiments on human beings, when kept within reasonably well-defined bounds, conform to the ethics of the medical profession generally. The protagonists of the practice of human experimentation justify their views on the basis that such experiments yield results for the good of society that are unprocurable by other methods or means of study. All agree, however, that certain basic principles must be observed in order to satisfy moral, ethical, and legal concepts. Number one, the voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. This means that the person involved should have legal capacity to give consent. This should be so situated as to be able to exercise free power of choice. Without the intervention of any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, overreaching, or any other ulterior form of constraint or coercion, and should have sufficient knowledge and comprehension of the elements of the subject matter involved as to enable him to make an understanding and enlightened decision. This latter element requires that before the acceptance of an affirmative decision by the experimental subject, there should be made known to him the nature, duration, and purpose of the experiment, the method and means by which it is to be conducted, all inconveniences and hazards reasonably to be expected, and the effects upon his health or person which may possibly come from his participation in the experiment. The duty and responsibility for ascertaining the quality of the consent rests upon each individual who initiates, directs, or engages in the experiment. It is a personal duty and responsibility which may not be delegated to another with impunity. Number two, the experiment should be such as to yield fruitful results for the good of society, unprocurable by other methods or means of study, and not random and unnecessary in nature. Number three, the experiment should be so designed and based on the results of animal experimentation and a knowledge of the natural history of the disease or other problem under study that the anticipated results justify the performance of the experiment. Number four, the experiment should be so conducted as to avoid all unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury. Number five, no experiment should be conducted where there is a priori reason to believe that death or disabling injury will occur, except perhaps in those experiments where the experimental physicians also serve as subjects. Number six, the degree of risk to be taken should never exceed that determined by the humanitarian importance of the problem to be solved by the experiment. Number seven, proper preparations should be made and adequate facilities provided to protect the experimental subject against even the remote possibilities of injury, disability, or death. Number eight, the experiment should be conducted only by scientifically qualified persons. The highest degree of skill and care should be required through all stages of the experiment of those who conduct or engage in the experiment. Number nine, during the course of the experiment, the human subject should be at liberty to bring the experiment to an end if he has reached the physical or mental state where continuation of the experiment seems to him to be impossible. And number 10, during the course of the experiment, the scientist in charge must be prepared to terminate the experiment at any stage if he has probable cause to believe in the exercise of good faith, superior skill, careful judgment required of him, that a continuation of the experiment is likely to result in injury, disability, or death to the experimental subject. So now that I've read those, I want to go back over a few of them. Like number one, the first sentence says, the voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. That means for people who want to volunteer, it's no problem. But when you start threatening people's livelihood, people's jobs, and, children, running an experiment on kids, oh, man. and the duty, the second paragraph of that first point in the Nuremberg Code says the duty and responsibility for ascertaining the quality of the consent rests upon each individual. So everybody has a choice. But when they run a press release from the White House saying that it's a mandate that you must get this treatment or lose your job, that's wrong. First of all, because it's an experimental treatment. Nobody even knows what the results are going to be. It's a crime. It's a crime to force someone to do something they don't want to do. So another one I wanted to talk about here was, number four, it's pretty self-explanatory that the experiment should be so conducted as to avoid all unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury. What have we experienced with this experiment? Would you say that there has been any physical, mental suffering or injury to people? Do you remember the riots? And I think that there's a lot of things. There's actually been a plan. There's a plan to destabilize and destroy the greatest country that ever existed, America, United States of America. And we really need to come together and unite against this common enemy, which is seemingly both foreign and domestic. So number five says, no experiment should be conducted where there is a prior reason to believe that death or disabling injury will occur. So, if death and injury is occurring, that should be a priority to have the experiment not be causing death or disabling injuries. So, There's some things that are going on, you know, that are very, very wrong. And you know, ultimately, we still have we do have free will. I mean, as it is now, and I think we still are allowed to have guns. But we really need to come to our senses. You know, the truth can be hidden for a while, but it will always come to the surface, you know? And it's just people who get tricked and or deceived into doing something because because they didn't know. It's a real bad situation, and I don't know, things really need to change. But I wanted to bring you a little message from the Physicians for Informed Consent.org. Did you know that the Pfizer clinical trial provided no evidence that the vaccine prevents asymptomatic infection or transmission of the SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19? In addition, recent studies have observed that a significant proportion of severe, critical, and fatal cases of COVID-19 occurred in vaccinated individuals. Read Physicians for Informed Consent's updated Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine risk statement for an analysis of new safety data for children at http://physiciansforinformedconsent.org. Okay, you know, I probably spent, you know, I spent the first half of this on a particular subject, but I really just, you know, I care about you guys, and I want to bring you know, what I think is important. Now I have a little story to tell you. One day, a farmer's donkey fell down into a well. The animal cried for hours as the farmer tried to figure out what to do. Finally, he decided the animal was old and the well needed to be covered up anyway. It just wasn't worth it to retrieve the donkey. He invited all his neighbors to come over and help him. They all grabbed a shovel and began to shovel dirt into the well. At first, the donkey realized what was happening and cried horribly. Then, to everyone's amazement, he quieted down. A few shovel loads later, the farmer finally looked down at the well. He was astonished at what he saw. With each shovel of dirt that hit his back, the donkey was doing something amazing. He would shake it off and then take a step up. As the farmer's neighbors continued to shovel dirt on top of the animal, he would shake it off and take a step up. Pretty soon, everyone was amazed as the donkey stepped over the edge of the well and happily trotted off. So the moral of this story is, life is going to shovel dirt on you, all kinds of dirt. The trick to getting out of the well is to shake it off and take a step up. Each of our troubles is a stepping stone. We can get out of the deepest wells just by not stopping, never giving up. Shake it off and take a step up. So just remember these five rules, simple rules to be happy. Free your heart from hatred. That means forgive. Number two, free your mind from worries. Most of them never happen anyway. Three, live simply and appreciate what you have. Four, give more. Five, expect less from people, but more from yourself. You know, there's a guy who started Chase Bank called, his name was JP Morgan. And back in 1913, he said, "Capital must protect itself in every way. Debts must be collected and loans and mortgages foreclosed as soon as possible." When, through a process of law, the common people have lost their homes, they will be more tractable and more easily governed by the strong arm of the law applied by the central power of leading financiers. People without homes will not quarrel with their leaders. This is well known among our principal men now, engaged in forming an imperialism of capitalism to govern the world. By dividing the people, we can get them to expend their energies in fighting over questions of no importance to us, except as teachers of the common herd. You know, pretty soon I'm going to get some sound effects. That'd be cool. I want to have some transitional sound effects for this show. Human beings only have two ways to deal with one another, reason and force. If you want me to do something for you, you have a choice of either convincing me via argument or force me to do your bidding under threat of force. Every human interaction falls into one of these two categories without exception. Reason or force. That's it. In a truly moral and civilized society, people exclusively interact through persuasion. Force has no place as a valid method of social interaction, and the only thing that removes force from the menu is the personal firearm. As paradoxical as it may sound to some, when I carry a gun, you cannot deal with me by force. You have to use reason and try to persuade me, because I have a way to negate your threat or employment of force. The gun is the only personal weapon that puts a 100-pound woman on equal footing with the 220-pound mugger, a 75-year-old retiree on equal footing with the 19-year-old gangbanger, and a single guy on equal footing with a carload of drunken guys with baseball bats. The gun removes the disparity in physical strength, size, or numbers between a potential attacker and a defender. There are plenty of people who consider the gun to be the source of bad force equations. These are the people who think that we'd be more civilized if all guns were removed from society, because a firearm makes it easier for an armed mugger to do his job. That, of course, is only true if the mugger's potential victims are mostly disarmed, either by choice or by legislative fiat. It has no validity when most of a mugger's potential marks are armed. People who argue for the banning of arms ask for automatic rule by the young, the strong, and the many, and that's the exact opposite of a civilized society. A mugger, even an armed one, can only make a successful living in a society where the state has granted him a forced monopoly. Then there's the argument that the gun makes confrontations lethal that otherwise would only result in injury. This argument is fallacious in several ways. Without guns involved, confrontations are won by the physically superior party, inflicting overwhelming injury on the loser. People who think that fists, bats, sticks, or stones don't constitute lethal force just probably watch too much TV, where people take beatings and come out of it with a bloody lip at the worst, maybe a black eye, or a little trickle of blood coming out the nose, you know. The fact that the gun makes lethal force easier works solely in favor of the weaker defender, not the stronger attacker. If both are armed, the field is level. The gun is the only weapon that's as lethal in the hands of an octogenarian as it is in the hands of a weightlifter. It simply wouldn't work as well as a force equalizer if it wasn't both lethal and easily employable. When I carry a gun, I don't do so because I'm looking to be left alone. The gun at my side means that I cannot be forced, only persuaded. I don't carry it because I'm afraid, but because it enables me to be unafraid. It doesn't limit the actions of those who would interact with me through reason, only the actions of those who would do so by force. It removes force from the equation, and that's why carrying a gun is a civilized act. You know, I'm a big proponent of the Second Amendment. I support carrying guns and being able to defend yourself. But at the same time, you know, I may have had some times in my life, or written some articles or books and you know, talked about maybe anarchist ideologies, but now that we are facing this new threat where there's a war going on, but you can't see the enemy. Just like the war on drugs. I mean, it's not a war on the drugs. It's a war on people. Just like it's not a war on, it wasn't a war on terrorism. It's a war on people. And now this newest one is so convoluted that it is a war, like medical war. You know, we've come a long ways from the days that two different sides would line up, you know, at opposite ends of the field and just start shooting at each other with arrows or muskets or whatever. It was a lot more simple back there. Then you could know, you knew who the enemy was, you know, and you knew, you know, it was easier to tell, you know, who was fighting and what they were fighting over. But today it's not so easy. And it's really, it's a battle between good and evil. It's a battle for our souls. You know, I am doing what I do, you know, as kind of paying a debt forward to future generations, because right now we're standing at a point in time where things could change forever in a way that is not good. So before I go tonight, or today, whatever time it is now that you're hearing this, I wanted to ask, you know, and talk about a little bit of something else about law. Can anyone tell me what a law is? Is it something that is written by legislatures? Is it something written by lawyers? Or are laws written by God? Or are laws even written down at all? Which law book would you find the law of gravity in? A law does not need to be written down to see evidence of it, and the law is directly related to your rights. Do you know why it is directly related to your rights? Well, the law is so simple and so closely related to your rights because the rights are the law. What are your rights? Have you ever told a cop, "I know my rights"? Do you know why saying that you know your rights sounds odd? Because everyone knows their rights inherently if you know the difference between right and wrong. I might as well tell you right now, while we're on this topic, that there is no constitution that gives you rights. There is only a constitution that all public servants swear an oath to uphold and protect. It has nothing to do with the people except that the constitution is rules for government to follow so that our rights are protected. The constitution does not give you rights. Your rights are inherent or natural, and they do not come from the government. The Constitution isn't even applicable to you, but we do use it to hold government servants accountable. All the rules are rules to restrict government, and they have tricked us to think that the government is the authority because of the Constitution. But they are not even enforcing the Constitution. Everything is backwards because they're enforcing rules, statutes, codes, and policy on people who it does not apply to because they are not employed by government. And like I said before, if their policy applies to me, then I need to be getting a regular paycheck because I don't follow orders for free. Just think, when a public servant pulls you over and writes you a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt, he is breaking the law. He is breaking the law because he is forcing or enforcing policy that is only meant for agents of government. Not only that, but he is actually extorting and committing piracy on the land by pillaging and unjustly enriching himself and his organization by forcing you to pay for not following his rules. All their right is something that is not wrong. So your rights are things that you are allowed to do where no one else should infringe on those rights because they are not wrong. It is that simple. Although you may not be able to see the simplicity of it right now, right away, it really is simple. The law is do no harm, and that is pretty much it. And you know what? That wraps it up for me for tonight. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for checking me out here on 106.9 FM and talkradioperump.com. Peace.